Going to put the baseball conversation aside for a couple of minutes and jump into the National Football League. Yeah, we had the Hall of Fame game last week, but the NFL preseason gets underway in earnest tomorrow night and runs through the rest of the weekend with the 30 other teams getting their first preseason game in. Here to talk all things NFL with us is NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Charlie Casserly, CharlieCasserly. The former Redskin GM, Charlie Casserly, here with us on The Fan. How you doing, Charlie?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. My pleasure. Caught you on the network the other day. Which camp were you guys at that it was so hot that you were donning the shorts?
You wear the shorts all the time.
All the time.
You don't know that. Yeah, wear the shorts all the time. People only see the top party anyway. So, okay. But Denver was a little warm. We had a lot of rain, though, in our travels.
It sounds to me like you saw enough football. What we're going to see in most of the teams' first games this week is a deep roster, and you've got roster decisions to make. The coaching staff is evaluating you and your staff as a general manager with your scouts and the like are evaluating. What is the main thing that you want to see week one preseason as you're putting together a football team?
Well, there's a combination of things. One, when your starters are in there, you'd like to win the game when the starters are in there. You like to look sharp, play sharp, even though you're going to be limited in what you do. So that's always number one. And number two, it just comes down to position battles. And each team has position battles, and then you're going to work through them as you have to go through four preseason games to evaluate your players and give them enough playing time. So it's position battles.
I'm going to tap into your former general manager experience. Don't know how often you had to deal with this during your years, and it has changed over the years because the collective bargaining and the rules of the National Football League have changed as well from the time you were making the decisions. Holdouts, guys who either aren't coming in because they don't want to honor their contract, they want it renewed, and or don't like being franchise tagged. It can be very disruptive. Number one, you're not getting a player up to speed. Number two, everybody's looking at everybody else in the locker room and the like. How much hands-on communication do you have to have with your coach day in, day out basis, couple times a day, just to let them know where you're at, let them know where they're at? How important is the back and forth between the coach and the general manager just seeing if you can get this thing done, get this guy back to the team?
The way I did it was very important. And really, the coach is the one who communicates with the player. I wouldn't communicate with the player. I would communicate with the agent. And, you know, the coach is trying to give you a feel where the player is, making sure that the communication is clear now, that the coach always knows exactly what the offers are so that the player knows what the offers are through the coach. So make sure there's no communication like that. It's far worse when I did it than it is now, because players' only leverage back then was to hold out. Now their leverage is to be a free agent. The franchise tag is their biggest leverage if they're that good. Because teams don't want to franchise players. They want long-term extensions. After we won the 91 Super Bowl, we had four holdouts in camp, three veteran players. Mark Rippon, the quarterback MVP of the Super Bowl, Jim Lachey, all-pro left tackle, Darryl Green, all-pro cornerback, and our first-round pick. So we had four guys holding out at the same time, but it became a little bit of a game. Nobody wanted to be first, and nobody wanted to be last. Okay,
right.
So that was. But there's a clock in their head where they want to play, and then that basically, when that clock goes off, they're going to come in. It's a disaster for a lot of them to hold out during the season because the money's so big right now. Not so much even the fines; it's their salary they're missing. So this is a piece of cake compared to what we used to have.
You work with a couple of different coaches, and I'm sure different coaches handle it differently. But you mentioned the chances are that if anybody's going to talk directly to the player, it's going to be the coach, not going to be you. You're going to talk to the agent. But the coach has got 90-some-odd other players that he's dealing with. Does he broach it individually with other players? We're going to get this. Do you keep it positionally? If it's a linebacker, your linebacker coach, you're telling them through him, your assistant, where you're at with the player and the like. out of sight, out of mind? Do you not reference him across the team if he's in the midst of a holdout? How is the communication handled on the coach's end?
Well, I always made sure the head coach knew everything at the moment that that I could tell him. So he was never really behind in it. I'm sure, as I remember, he has shared it with the assistants, but I don't know how much the assistants ever shared it with the players. You know, the players are a tight-knit group sometimes with those positions, so sometimes they wouldn't share the money, though.
Okay.
And sometimes the players can tell you where the player's mindset is, too. But publicly, I never talked about negotiations. I never negotiated in the press. It's the standard line. You know, we'll talk about the players that are here, not the ones that aren't here.
Charlie Cassidy.
So, that's how you handle that.
Sorry about that. Charlie Cassidy, NFL Network analyst, our guest here on The Fan. Charlie, yesterday we had Tony Dungy here in studio. I asked him this question. I want to put it to you as well. Sports cliches, sports axioms, they become cliches because there's a whole bunch of truth attached to them often. One that I love throwing around is to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. Are the Philadelphia Eagles worthy of that? Are they that type of team off what they accomplished last year, the run they got on, and then the victory over the Patriots in the Super Bowl? Do they sit on that same type level? Well, they're the favorite until someone takes it from them.
Sure, they are. The thing interesting thing will be about to watch them. I mean, that was a tournament last year in that NFC because this, you know, they obviously won it. Maybe the Falcons could have won it. Minnesota could have won it. The Saints could have won it. I mean, they darn near lost the game to the Falcons. So they may not have got past their first game if the Falcons had been able to, you know, execute the play at the end of the game to win a touchdown in the red zone. So here's what I look at them. They didn't have Wentz at the end, and they won it. Wentz is an MVP candidate. It was last year. So that's a plus. The secondary was young, burned by Brady, but burned by other people. But how much better are they? They got a bunch of young kids there, and, you know, they might get better. They get better, then, you know, all of a sudden the team is better. So they've got some things. Jason Peters didn't play. Darren Sproles didn't play. So they've got some players that didn't play that could make them better along the football team there. The key to them is the offensive line and the defensive line. Both of them should be, again, pretty good going into next year. But the corners, to me, are the key. Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, and Sidney Jones, who was drafted in the second round last year, didn't play. If he did, he played right at the end.
Yep.
Because of an injury. So those to me, they were overrated. Now let's see if they're good enough.
We shall see. Charlie Cassidy here with us on The Fan. Charlie, I have not heard any updated reports from any of the quote-unquote NFL insiders about where the conversations are between the league and the NFLPA as far as protesting during the national anthem. The NFL owners met, decided they were going to implement a policy and or rules and leave it up to the team. The first time that an owner stepped out and took a hardline stance, they said, whoa, it wasn't exactly the way we were. All bets are off. Let's go back. Let's talk this over with the players. Well, that was now a good couple of weeks ago, and I've heard nothing about dialogue between the NFLPA and the owners. Where is that at right now?
You have no idea. It's not something I follow. My concern is just the players on the field, and that's not a political answer. It's true. I don't follow the thing. I have no idea. I haven't asked anybody. I thought it's interesting. It wasn't solved before we started playing games. It may be solved just by what happens in these games and how the players are going to handle it right now. So I think it's something to watch. And again, maybe the players will solve it themselves.
Charlie, don't know if any of the teams you ever had, it's been around now for a good couple of years, so it might have been while you were still running your shows. Did you ever have to deal with Hard Knocks?
No. When we were with Houston as an expansion team, they wanted to do it our first year, and we turned it down. We didn't want to do it, and it turns out the Cowboys took it. We opened with the Cowboys and used video clips out of Hard Knocks to show they didn't respect us, to motivate our team, and we beat them, the first expansion team to win an opener in 41 years. So I wasn't a fan of it. I do think they do a very good job of editing. I just would feel very uncomfortable having conversations with a player and having a camera on it, especially if you're releasing the player. I think that's a private moment, and I understand the value for television. Trust me, I'm in television.
Right.
I think it's great television. But I would not want to have it with our team.
He gets it. He had a previous job where it wouldn't be good. He's got a job now where it is good. I enjoy Hard Knocks. I didn't see the debut episode last night. I'm going to go back and watch it tonight. Charlie, do you have an opinion on Terrell Owens not showing up for his Hall of Fame induction this past weekend?
Yeah, I thought it was wrong. I totally disagree with it. The Hall of Fame is an honor. I didn't pay much attention to his reasons. I guess some of them were, you know, thought he was slighted. Well, so what? Okay, so what? It's hard to get in on the first ballot because you've got players not only who are first ballot guys, but you have players from other years who are more than worthy who have been waiting, and now it's time to get them in before we forget about them, and they get older, and then we know these other guys, we can get them in that way. So there's somewhat of a jockeying type thing the committee has to do. I get it. It's hard. I think all he did by not showing up was just give his critics and detractors more ammunition. Randy Moss showed up and gave a speech. He should have showed up and given a speech.
All right, Charlie, last thing. And again, tapping into your years of experience in the league, this is a broad brush stroke statement question. Understood that different teams are in different positions with different players on their roster and developments of the entire roster and expectations going into a year. But generally speaking, do you think a highly drafted first round pick quarterback is better off playing week one, playing week five, taking an entire season to sit back and redshirt and watch and learn? I understood that you can't make a definitive statement about any one individual because, again, all situations are different. But just in general, what was your opinion on highly thought of, highly drafted quarterbacks and what was best for them to get into the starting lineup?
First of all, there is no right or wrong answer to this because it's been done every way. Peyton Manning started opening day. Carson Palmer never played a down. Eli Manning and Donovan McNabb didn't play till midway to later in their season. So there's many answers to this question. Okay. In theory, what I would like to see is the player sit, take time, develop, not necessarily play his first year. I think the second thing is if he's going to play, make sure that he knows enough of the system out there to be able to execute it. And the whole key to success many times is the talent around him. Is there enough talent around him to let him be successful? So there is no clear-cut answer. I like the old way we did it where you guys didn't have to play right away. But they do now because of free agency after 4 years.
All right. Where will you next be donning the shorts? What camp visit do you have coming up?
Well, we're done our camp visits. Now it's games.
Okay.
So we'll just be watching tape on games and reporting. And then when the season starts, we'll be on live during the week. That's where we're going to sit right now. Up to the minute is the show I'll be on. But a lot of tape work over the next couple of weeks.
Charlie Casley.
But we're still in shorts, though.
You can do all the tape work in shorts that you need. Charlie, great stuff. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Okay, always a pleasure now.
NFL Network analyst Charlie Casley, former NFL executive general manager and the like.